because at WrestleMania, I will put an end to this little yes movement, to your pathetic yes movement. I will put an end to Daniel Bryan. There will be no triple threat. At WrestleMania, I put an end to your dreams and I bury Daniel Bryan.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan has definitely been that rocket fuel that TNA needed.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
I'm fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 318 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, March 16th, 2014. I am the Solid Monster. Happy 316. See, you can buy a Sound Off 316 shirt from our store and it's still relevant. This week's Sound Off is brought to you by Audible.com. For those of you who may not know, Audible is a service that offers lots of audiobooks, over 100,000 titles, wrestling titles and otherwise. And we got a great deal going right now where you can help out the podcast. If you go to audibletrial.com/solomonster, it recognizes it almost like a reference code. You can browse the site, check it out. And if you sign up, you can sign up free for 30 days, no cost to you. You get one free audiobook when you sign up. You get to keep that audiobook whether you stick with the service or not. I've heard from a lot of you guys. I know a lot of you have signed up and have enjoyed it, so I appreciate that. And if you go to audibletrial.com/solomonster, it'll help out the show when you do so. Check it out. I think you're going to like it. And again, there's wrestling books up there, Hogan's book, Dusty Rhodes' book. There's a book about JYD, the days of Mid-South wrestling. So there's a lot of wrestling titles up. And if you're an avid reader and you're not so much just interested in wrestling, you can pick almost any book you want, really. And you will get the audio form of that book that you can listen to on your commute to work, school, at the gym, whatever floats your boat. So audibletrial.com/solomonster. If you sign up there, again, free for 30 days, you get one free audio book. Check it out and let me know what you think. I received an email from Podbean, which is our host for the show, telling me that the Sound Off was chosen as a featured podcast in the sports category on their website. Email said, podcasts are chosen for this section based on the high quality of their content presentation and topicality. It's our way of showing some support to our best users. So that's awfully nice of them. And you know what? For all the problems I've had with Podbean, it's nice to have some positive Podbean news to report here for a change. So I wanted to mention that here. PayPal shoutouts. I mentioned last week, we tend to get a lot of the same people who make donations to the show, and I very much appreciate their support. And so just to do something fun, I said, you know, anybody who donates $10 or more to the show on our website, thesolomonster.com, I will give a wrestling nickname to. And we'll try to stick with that nickname from now on whenever they donate. And I got a lot of donations, and so I want to just run through this really quickly here. Now, my sincere hope is that the people who did donate, who have been assigned a name, are happy with it. Maybe not everybody will be, but let's just run through the list really quickly here. Chuck Lentz is one of our biggest supporters, and he's kind of a crazy man. So we went with Chuck Lunatic Lentz. So Lunatic Lentz is his name. We have Eazy-E, Elliot Lee, Ed the Strangler Crumlish, I like that one, Robert Loverboy Lopez, John the Beast Barber, James Hollywood Henderson, Luis Hercules Hernandez, come on, that was a given, Brutal Barton Campbell, Psychotic Sean Barba, Bryce the Mauler Murray, Dangerous David Hastings, and James Wildman Ward. I could start my own promotion with all those guys. So thank you to everybody who donated. I really appreciate it. Again, you can give whatever you want to. The $10 or more thing just applies to a nickname. But you can go to thesolomonster.com. You'll see the donation box. And every little bit helps, and I appreciate the help. CM Punk is going to be on Talking Dead, which airs right after The Walking Dead tonight as I am recording this, 10 p.m. on AMC. They announced him as Phil Brooks on last week's show. This will be his second time on the show and his first live television appearance since the Royal Rumble, not counting his cameo in the crowd at the most recent UFC pay-per-view. I would not tune in expecting any wrestling talk. They do take live calls and audience questions on the show, but they're all pre-screened, I'm sure. I saw some recent pictures on Twitter of Punk, one with Henner Gracie and Lyoto Machida watching UFC 171. There's another one of Punk with a fan in his jiu-jitsu garb or whatever he was wearing, with this giant smile on his face, just looking happy and stress-free. And you know what? Good for him. If he is happier and he is stress-free, good for him. I'm happy to see it. By the way, I don't get all the hate I'm seeing online for this season of The Walking Dead, I just have to say. I'm liking the season so far. I think we only have 3 episodes left, but you know, maybe it's just because they're finally out of that damn prison. But they're doing a lot of character development this season. You know, they're getting you to care about the characters, clearly because some of them are going to get killed off. And when they do, they want you to feel more than just apathy towards them. They always do this. You know, they get you to care about a character or even like a character, and then bam, you know, zombie food. And I have to say, they had the actress who plays Sasha on Talking Dead last Sunday, Sonequa Martin-Green, and holy cow, I never realized how hot this woman is. I guess, you know, running around in a zombie apocalypse, she doesn't have time to do her hair and makeup, but that was the first time I saw her out of character, and wow. Is all I can say. Just another reason to watch The Walking Dead, I guess. I don't know. I'm loving it this season. And what else did I want to mention here before moving on? The WWE Network. I want to just talk about this really quickly. I caught part of the live stream on the network yesterday. I caught the Elimination Chamber main event from 2012. That just happened to be on. It was John Cena versus Kane. Noticed a big-ass Sala Monster sign in the crowd at the start of the match, so that was cool to see. When that ended, they aired a match between Rey Mysterio and Dean Malenko as kind of a buffer, I guess, between the end of the pay-per-view and whatever show is coming on next. So it looked like it was from one of Rey's DVDs. It was Mysterio against Dean Malenko from WCW Monday Nitro the night after Bash at the Beach in 96, where Hogan turned heel and joined the NWO. They filmed this Nitro outdoors at Universal Studios, I think it was. It was funny seeing all the old people sitting in the front row. You know, clearly they took the most elderly people there, people in wheelchairs, and they're all just right there. There's no barricade or anything. They're just sitting in the front row and having a good time, I guess, watching Rey Mysterio fly around the ring and Dean Malenko doing his thing. And I give WCW a lot of credit. I always enjoyed those outdoor Nitro shows, the spring break shows from Club La Villa. WWE never does anything fun like that. You know, only for WrestleMania they'll have outdoor shows. Would it really kill them to do a spring break Raw or something like that? You know, change it up a little bit. This was Mysterio's first title win. He beat Malenko for the Cruiserweight title. And then they aired a SmackDown episode from 2003, Best of SmackDown, with the Brock Lesnar versus Kurt Angle 60-minute Iron Man match for the WWE title. A great freaking match. They were the perfect two guys to have an Iron Man match. And it really hit me watching that show, because it was the whole episode, how awesome SmackDown was that year. You know, SmackDown was the shit in 2003. They had a Mysterio, Chris Benoit versus Tajiri Rhino tag team match, which is the first Benoit match I've watched in years. They had Eddie and Chavo against Haas and Benjamin for the tag team titles. I had something else to do after that, but I tuned back in for the Iron Man match. But, I mean, they had those guys. They had The Rock, you know, Taker, Hogan. So they had big names on the show, too. It wasn't just, oh, some good wrestlers. They had a lot of A-level talent on the show, plus Eddie and Benoit and Mysterio and Edge and Jericho at some point went over to SmackDown. You know, that's why SmackDown was the A-show, in my opinion, that year. You know, while Triple H was busy, you know, terrorizing the world on Raw, these guys were tearing it up every week. Yeah, it was awesome. So anyway, I'll have little updates on the network like that every now and then when I catch what's on. It's well worth the $9.99 for this stuff alone. And from what I understand, once this free trial period is over, and I have no idea when the trial period is ending because it was only supposed to be that first week and they've extended it. I don't expect that when WrestleMania rolls around, you're going to be able to sign up for... I just can't see them doing that. So I'm sure it's going to be over sometime in the next 2 weeks would be my guess. I don't know if they extended it because they were unhappy with the number of signups or if I'm just reading too much into that. But once this free trial period is over, from what I understand, they're going to be adding a lot more stuff. They may be adding every single Saturday night's main event. They may be adding every single Clash of the Champions at that point. So they're going to be adding more and more to it, so well worth the $9.99. Raw this past Monday night was live from Memphis, Tennessee, the King's hometown. Big story coming out of that show was the WrestleMania main event shakeup. Daniel Bryan, his Occupy Raw segment. Forget all the hijack Raw nonsense from Chicago the week before. This segment was proof that if enough people feel that strongly about something or someone, they can make a difference in terms of the decisions that are made. In this case, the fans helped get the WrestleMania main event changed. That's a pretty big deal. And it's a change for the better because, you know, heel, boo this, deal with it, Batista, against heel, monotone, slow and boring Randy Orton would have been a disaster as a WrestleMania main event. They really had no choice but to make a change once it became clear that the fan support for Bryan was not going away. The fan support for Bryan could have collapsed 3 months ago the way they booked this guy. But it didn't. You know, they stayed the course. They stuck with him. And, you know, once that became obvious and became obvious that Batista was not going to be welcomed back with open arms the way they probably thought he would be, you know, it's hilarious to me that there are people out there who honestly believe this was WWE's plan all along. Oh, you see, it's the slow burn. As though their plan, when they brought Batista back after 4 years away from WWE, and they signed him to a fat six-figure contract, I'm sure, was to have him win the Royal Rumble and then go to WrestleMania in a triple threat match. Right. That was the original plan. These people make me laugh. They really do. Delusional is what they are. Plans change. Okay, plans change. Sometimes for the better. This is one of those times. And for me, it's been fun as a fan to follow this whole story that really goes back to WrestleMania 28 in Miami. When Bryan got beat in 18 seconds, and the next night on Raw, that crowd, you know, that's where this whole supposed yes movement started to take off. And to follow along from that, his feud with Punk for the title in 2012, teaming with Kane and doing the comedy stuff for a while, to where he is today, it's really cool to see. You can see the ascent of his character, and believe me, his character didn't go from where he was 2 years ago to where he is now because there was some grandmaster plan. They loved Daniel Bryan so much, and they saw him as, you know, future main event WrestleMania world champion material that they hatched this great plan. No, I mean, the fans took to him. There's something about the guy that they like, and it's not just people that knew him from the independent scene, obviously. There's some kind of likable characteristic about the guy, whether it's he's a great wrestler, he seems like a nice guy, maybe there's a lot of female fans who started watching the product through Total Divas who came to like him because he's with Brie. I don't know. Everyone has their reasons for why they like the guy. But whatever it is, clearly there's something about him that they liked. And the fans spoke up, and they were vocal, and they kept chanting his name, and they kept chanting yes. And at some point, the company had no choice but to say, all right, I guess we should probably do something with the guy. So hats off to everybody who helped him kind of get to where he is now, because without that fan support, believe me, this guy, you know, he'd be doing okay, but I don't think Daniel Bryan would be anywhere close to where he is right now if it wasn't for the fan support. And don't believe for a second that he would have gotten to the position he's in now because it was the plan. Because those people are full of shit. So it's going to be Bryan against Evolution, essentially, at WrestleMania. What happens now is that Bryan goes one-on-one with Triple H. They had the segment on Raw where all the fans, and they weren't really fans. I mean, there were maybe a handful of fans, like Rick the Sign Guy I saw was in there. But apparently it was a bunch of WWE employees. They dressed up in Daniel Bryan shirts. And so the visual was great. They had the whole ring. At first, when Bryan started bringing people in the ring before they came back from commercial, it was like a handful of people. It was like, ugh, this is pathetic. When they came back, the entire ringside area was just flooded with people. And Bryan refused to leave the ring. He said, you know, wrestlers come out here and they say, I'm not leaving until I get what I want. And he said, that's not going to be the case. I am not leaving this ring until I get what I want. And they come back, and it's just this sea of people out there, and Triple H and Stephanie come out, they go back and forth. So Bryan gets his match with Triple H at WrestleMania. And I like that because at least it's a match we haven't seen before. Triple H and Bryan is fresh. It has been building for many months. you know, remember when they did Big Show and Randy Orton at Survivor Series, that was a match that nobody wanted to see. They did a good job of building the Big Show up as this great big babyface. People were going nuts for the guy, but you thought, okay, they're building to Triple H and Big Show maybe at Survivor Series. People want to see Big Show knock him out. Instead, they had him knock Triple H out on Raw, and he wrestled Orton, and nobody gave a shit, and Survivor Series bombed. But they've built up these different things for Triple H that hasn't really amounted to anything. You know, they were building to Punk, but Punk left. So now we're finally going to get the match between the two of them, and it's a match that has meaning. This match has a purpose. If they were just going to do Triple H and Bryan at WrestleMania, it would have been a letdown, because that's not the match people wanted to see. Even when Bryan came out a few weeks ago and he said, I want to meet Triple H one-on-one at WrestleMania. It kind of got an okay response, but you could tell that's not the match that people wanted to see. They just kind of went along with it because they like Bryan, and it's like, all right, well, okay, he wants us to cheer for the match. Yay, okay, great, Triple H and Bryan. That's not the match they wanted to see. The way they've built this story up since August, the only payoff here is that the guy gets a fair shake at the title and he wins the championship. So now at least this match has some kind of purpose to it. And Bryan is playing the Bret Hart role from WrestleMania 10. He's wrestling twice in one night. Unlike the Bret match with Owen, which was a great match, and I guess it set up Owen as the number one contender, but that match really didn't have any meaning at that pay-per-view. You know, Bret lost, came back later in the night, won the title. Here, Bryan has to win. Either he wins or goes home. So this match all of a sudden has drama. You know, it has purpose to it. If he can get past Triple H, he gets inserted into the Batista-Orton match and he makes it a three-way. And I am not a fan of having a three-way or a four-way for the WrestleMania main event, but I'll make an exception this time because it makes sense. And I like the drama of it. So it's fine. It actually makes total sense for them to do it this way. One thing they have to be careful of, I watched the Raw Backstage Pass show, and Renee Young had a backstage interview with Daniel Bryan where he went off on this rant comparing the Yes Movement to people rebelling against corporations that pollute the planet and, you know, the environment and all these different things that I know are near and dear to Bryan in real life, but that's a dangerous thing to be doing. You know, people don't want to see political activist Daniel Bryan. They want to see Daniel Bryan kicking people's heads in and throwing his index finger up in the air. Stone Cold Steve Austin was himself with the volume turned up, right? He said that in interviews before. But it's not like he came out on Raw back in his prime talking about stomping a mud hole in people who supported gay marriage. Like you would think a beer-drinking, deer-hunting redneck from Texas might just do back in that day. Okay, and I'm not saying that that was or is Austin's actual position on gay marriage. I'm just using that as an example. Point being, that would have turned off a shitload of fans, and that's not what you want. So they should be careful, because I could see that being a turnoff for a lot of fans. Maybe he just got carried away and went off on his own and started saying all these different things, because he's talked about that in radio interviews. You know, he used to eat vegan, and he supports the environment and all these different things, and that's great. You know, that's great for him, but I just don't think wrestling fans care. I don't think wrestling fans want to hear that in a promo. And I would hate for that to suddenly turn people off to the guy. You know, just keep doing what you're doing. That seems to be working pretty well. Speaking of fans, there is a thread on our Facebook group page, where there was, about hate for Daniel Bryan sprouting up online. I haven't seen any of this hate myself, other than the usual people who just don't like the guy. But I haven't seen this in the last like week or two, this big rush of, you know, anti-Daniel Bryan support. Apparently it's in the comment sections of some YouTube videos and in a few other places. It's like, really? YouTube? Have you seen the comments on YouTube? You're basing this on seeing negative comments on YouTube? These guys, you know, if 100 vaginas fell from the sky and found their way to their crotch, they'd still find something to complain about. I mean, come on. This is nonsense. I wouldn't call that a scientific sample of how fans really feel about the guy. Some people will just never be happy. That's just the way it is. You know, they cheer and they cheer and they cheer for a guy and they shout his name as loud as they can and they complain he's not getting a push. And then finally when he does and the machine starts to get behind them, oh, this guy is stale, he's boring, they're shoving him down our throats, he's sold out. I think it's some kind of weird brain disorder these people suffer from that just prevents them from feeling emotions like joy and satisfaction. Also on the show, Hulk Hogan announced a 30-man Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal for WrestleMania. First names announced are John Cena, who promptly withdrew his name to wrestle Bray Wyatt instead. As if Cena would be caught dead in a mid-card Battle Royal at WrestleMania. I mean, give me a break. Dolph Ziggler, Kofi Kingston, Ryback, Curtis Axel, Damian Sandow, Cesaro, and Intercontinental Champion Big E. So, no Intercontinental title defense at WrestleMania this year. Last defense on the main card was 28 in Miami. Last year it was on the pre-show. Before that, we had that stretch of like 7 or 8 WrestleManias without an Intercontinental title defense. It's just how it is now. Cesaro kind of surprises me, since I figured they would do him and Jack Swagger in a singles match. I mean, I guess they still could, but I don't think anybody is pulling double duty on that show except for Bryan. I didn't see Cesaro listed on the WWE.com listing for this match, but they inserted an interview with him on the German feed, I guess, of this week's Raw. Or one of the shows this week that aired overseas, they had an interview with him talking about the Battle Royal, so they should officially announce it this week. And maybe when they do, Swagger will toss his name in there as well. Hogan and Cena, and by the way, just to go back to the Battle Royal for a second, if Alexander Rusev is in this Battle Royal, he's my pick to win. I don't know if he'll be in it. I still don't understand why they even had him in the Royal Rumble in the first place, because they've been doing this thing for weeks now where Lana comes out and she says, you know, Nemanja, and he comes out and he stands on this podium and he talks in Bulgarian. And so they're building to his debut. Why put the guy in the Royal Rumble in the first place, especially when he wasn't going to win? He just got dumped out like everybody else. So that was kind of dumb. I don't know why they do that. But if he's in this one, he's my pick to win. Hogan and Cena. Hogan and Cena are in the ring together to open the show this past Monday night. And they did a posing routine after Cena's crappy match with Eric Rowan. I did not like that match at all. There's something about that damn Real American music. I'm telling you, man. Cena looked like a kid in a candy store out there doing the Hulk Hogan poses, and Shawn Michaels looked to be having a lot of fun, too, when he did the same thing back in 05. And as I mentioned on Twitter, Hogan versus Cena had been the planned main event for WrestleMania 25 in Houston. That would have been a hell of a double main event right there. Hulk Hogan versus John Cena and Shawn Michaels against The Undertaker. But Hogan had a botched back surgery the month before, so they scrapped it. That's why John Cena ended up in a three-way with Edge and Big Show that year. That and Triple H versus Randy Orton were hardly marquee matches for the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania. Hogan versus Cena would have been huge. You know, a crap match in the ring, yeah, probably. But as an attraction, monster main event. Monster business, I think, for that match. But they would have had to have prayed for a crowd in Houston like the one they had in Toronto when Hogan wrestled Rock. Otherwise, you know, with a quiet crowd, I think that match would have died a death. It irked me to see John Cena out there doing comedy with Bray Wyatt when the Wyatt family came out to cut a promo on Cena and Hogan. You know, yes, to the outside world, Bray Wyatt probably looks ridiculous in the fedora and the Hawaiian shirt. He looks like Robert De Niro from Cape Fear, whatever movie it was. I think I get my movies mixed up. But, you know, in storyline, he's a guy you're supposed to fear. He's supposed to unnerve you. It's hard to maintain that vibe when you've got John Cena out there doing basically what he did was a poor man's version of Rockin' Austin, singing Margaritaville, which Rockin' Austin did like 12 years ago on Raw. And I remember that, too, because that was the go-home Raw to the Survivor Series. That was the big, you know, Team WWF against the Alliance main event, and the go-home segment on Raw to that pay-per-view was Rock and Austin, who were on opposing teams, in the ring together singing, which is really stupid. I mean, maybe it was a fun segment to go back and look at, but you got to admit, that was pretty fucking stupid for that to be the final image people had before, you know, this big payoff at Survivor Series where, you know, Team WWF is fighting for its very existence, and these guys are in the ring singing songs. But John Cena's out there doing a poor man's version of it. You know, why can't they knock the comedy shit off for one program? I mean, is it really that hard? Just one time have John Cena feud with somebody and not come out and cut jokes and sing and do crappy comedy? Is it really that hard to ask? I don't even know who to blame. Is it his fault? Is it the writer's fault? Does he not have any input at all into what he does? Can he not look at this and go, yeah, this is kind of not the way we should probably go. Why don't we do this instead? I would love to know what goes on in those discussions with him and the people who work backstage. I mean, he's been the top star in this company now for like a decade. You'd think this guy would have some pull. Does he really think that this is a smart move to be going out there and making fun of the guy like that? It just irks me. Kane reprimanded the Shield for having problems, traced it back to Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns losing the tag belts to the Rhodes Brothers back in October. So he put them in a rematch with Cody and Goldust, which was the best match on the entire show. I think it's impossible for those four guys to have a bad match. This didn't have nearly the kind of emotion their first match at Battleground did when they fought to get their jobs back. If you remember that whole storyline, Dusty Rhodes was in their corner. Or even the tag team title match they had a few weeks after that where Big Show interfered, helped them win the belts. But this was still great. Clean win for the Shield. Rollins curb stomps Cody to hell and gets the pin. On SmackDown this week, Kane had the Shield in his corner as backup for his match with the Big Show. Still lost. Shield got up on the apron. He told them to attack. They didn't. And Kane turned around right into a chokeslam, got pinned. And Reigns laid out Kane when the match was over. Kane went to chokeslam Seth Rollins. Roman Reigns laid him out with a spear. So based on what we saw this week, I'm thinking Kane gets his revenge on the Shield. Or the way I would do it is Kane gets his revenge on them by setting up a three-way, where they have to wrestle each other at WrestleMania, maybe for Dean Ambrose's United States Championship. I would rather not see Kane wrestling the Shield. I guess they could also do Kane teaming up with Luke Harper and Eric Rowan since they're not in a match. I mean, the way I would do it, I would have the tag team titles up for grabs in like a Fatal 4-Way type match. You can have the Usos defend against the Outlaws, who are due their rematch. Have them against Cody and Goldust, and maybe have the Wyatts in there to round things out. So you get two babyface teams, two heel teams. And just have Kane put the Shield in a three-way against each other. That way, it doesn't necessarily need to lead to a Shield breakup. You know, it's the Authority just putting them in a match. They have no choice. They have to go through with it. You know, it could be a friendly competition for the U.S. title, and you don't have to break them up so soon. But just the idea of Kane, you know, wrestling them, you know, I don't know. I mean, I will never argue against the Shield six-man match. If they want to go the six-man route with those guys at WrestleMania, I'm sure it'll be a great match regardless. You know, that TLC match back in 2012... Say what you want to about Kane as a wrestler. Kane was in that match. So was Ryback, by the way. And that was the match of the year. So these guys can go in there and they can have an awesome match with pretty much anybody on the roster except maybe Khali. He may be the exception. But personally, I'd probably go the three-way route just to have the Authority kind of fucking around with them and let them go in there and they'd probably have a great match against each other just like they would if they were tag team partners. The post-show dark match at the tapings was Rollins and Reigns against Harper and Rowan. Rollins apparently went wild in the match again. People went crazy. They loved everything the Shield did. They won, and they sent the crowd home happy. You can do the match at WrestleMania, like I said, without splitting them up. It could lead to more tension between them, but I'm all for dragging this thing out more. So if they want the Shield to stick together for another 6 months, you get no argument out of me. I think it's the right move to make. Undertaker was on this show. Brock was not. But before Undertaker could speak, Paul Heyman appeared on the stage. Heyman put Undertaker's 21-0 streak in perspective in a way that makes me wonder if they actually let Heyman himself come up with his own material for this segment. That's how much sense this made. He talked about how no other legend has had the kind of run that Undertaker has had at WrestleMania. Not even, you know, Mr. WrestleMania himself, Shawn Michaels, ever won back-to-back matches at WrestleMania, which I had to go back and check, and shockingly enough, that's true. I couldn't find back-to-back WrestleMania shows where Shawn actually won matches, which is kind of surprising. He talked about Triple H can never win more than, I think, three in a row. Hulk Hogan, who headlined 8 of the first 9 WrestleManias, also can only win 3 or 4 in a row. I think he said John Cena won 5 in a row. No wonder people are sick of the guy. Christ, did he really win 5 WrestleMania matches in a row? 20, he beat Big Show. He beat JBL. He beat Triple H. He beat Shawn Michaels. He lost at 24. Okay, so that's 4 in a row, not 5. Maybe I misheard him. In any event, I like this because it made the streak feel that much more impressive. Undertaker told Heyman to deliver a message to his client. Said, fear of death is greater than the death itself. But the fear of the unknown is the greatest fear of all. And if Brock shows up, he will rest in peace. Which leads me to wonder if Undertaker is taking a bump at any point during this build-up, or if he's just going to come out and cut promos every week. You would think at some point Brock has to kind of get revenge for Undertaker laying him out through that table a few weeks ago. Maybe not, though. Maybe they're just worried about Undertaker taking a bump. You know, the Shield laid him out through the announce table on SmackDown last year, and he got hurt. So maybe they don't want to run the risk of him getting hurt before WrestleMania. The Bella Twins beat AJ and Tamina after Nikki gave AJ the shock treatment. Abyss's move. Pinder. Divas stopwatch clocked this at 4 minutes 19 seconds. That seems to be the new norm, giving the girls a good 4 to 5 minutes each week now, which is a big step up from where things used to be when I first started this Divas stopwatch gimmick. I may have to retire it soon. Natalia was on commentary for this match. They were building to a Natalia-AJ title match on Main Event. Main Event was live on the network again Tuesday night. They built up two matches. It was Dean Ambrose defending the U.S. title against Mark Henry, which really wasn't much of a match. The real story was AJ and Natalia. Now, we know Natalia is very, very good, and we know AJ is pretty good herself. And they went out there, and this was the first time I've actually made it a point, because I didn't have to watch Main Event. It wasn't a big deal. I had other things to do. But I made it a point to watch Main Event, not for the U.S. title match, but specifically for the Divas title match, because I had a feeling this could be a pretty good match if they give them some time. I didn't clock it. I didn't even think to use the stopwatch. But they went, I think they went almost 15, they went something like 10 to 15 minutes in this match. They actually gave them time to work holds and to have a real wrestling match for a change. And what the end result was is the best Divas match all year in WWE. Now, granted, the year is only, you know, 3 months old, 3.5 months old. But it was the best Divas match I've seen in a long-ass time. Even better than the Paige-Emma match on the NXT Arrival show. And that was a good match, too. But I think this was better. So if you didn't see the match, if you normally don't give a shit about the Divas matches and you figure, they just give them 5 minutes, who cares? If you have a network subscription, I urge you to log in, find the Main Event replay, and watch that match. It was a really, really good match. I like the finishing sequence. They had AJ put Natalia in the Black Widow and Natalia got out. Like, they actually went back and forth and there were some near falls, and then finally AJ got her in the Black Widow, which is one of the best submissions that they have anybody, male or female, has on the roster, and finally Natalia tapped out. And that move means something because AJ's beaten almost everybody with it. Everybody is tapped out to that move. It's funny to me, when I think of the Divas, and I think of Paige, okay, down in NXT, and Paige now is using that Scorpion Crosslock submission, the Bull Nakano move. Apparently that's going to be her finisher from now on, because she used it again on NXT this week. And I watched this, and I'm like, they're teaching these girls submissions. And the funny, or sad, I guess, depending on how you look at it, their submission holds look far more brutal than most of the submission holds that the guys on the roster use. I mean, John Cena is the number one guy in the entire company, and his finisher looks like a joke compared to these women going out there and doing what they're doing. And even some of the new guys. You know, Alexander Rusev comes out. He has the accolade, which is really just a glorified camel clutch. And people don't even know how to take the frickin' move. They had a Rusev-Xavier Woods match on NXT this week. I mean, we'll get into that. But, you know, he locks him in the move, and almost immediately Woods takes his arms off of Rusev's knees. And I'm watching this, and I'm like, okay, well, why is this hold painful again? You're supposed to kind of stretch the guy back. It's supposed to look, you know, very painful, and it doesn't. But I watched the women's matches, and I'm like, oh my God, that looks like it would hurt. Same thing with Emma and her Emma lock. So I don't know who's teaching the women down there and what's going on, but the men have a lot of catching up to do as far as their submission holds go. There really is a lot of quality female talent in WWE right now. If they can just tap into it more and build some stories around these women like they did many years ago with, you know, Trish and Mickey. I mean, there are, and even Trish and Lita. I mean, there have been times where they will build an actual storyline and let it simmer and drag out over the course of a few months. They've done it before. Total Divas versus non-total Divas is lame and uninspired. That is not a storyline. You have X number of girls who happen to be on the reality show, and how many times have they trotted them out there for an eight-man women, an eight-women match or a 10-women match against the other women who are not on the reality show. Who cares? That's not a storyline. They need to come up with something better than that. WWE.com had a great write-up this week on Sara Del Rey. Sara Del Rey is down at the Performance Center in Orlando training all of these women. That's what they brought her in for. And she's gotten rave reviews. Daniel Bryan helped train her many years ago. And in the story, she admits, I never got into this to be the prettiest girl. I was more interested in women like Aja Kong in Japan and Karma. You know, really good wrestlers who looked like monsters and weren't necessarily beauty pageant contestants. And she lived in Japan for a while and trained there. She lived on her own for a while in, you know, bad parts of Mexico just to train and get by. And, you know, she became a great wrestler. And the story mentioned her time in Ring of Honor. It mentioned Chikara Pro. Dave Prazak is quoted in the article calling her the greatest women's wrestler that ever lived. Ever. That's some high praise right there. And when they ask her, could we see you in a WWE ring at some point, she doesn't say no. She leaves you with the impression that if she was asked, she would totally do it. And I don't understand why they don't give her a shot. You know, maybe they see her as being way too valuable to take her away from developmental. You know, she can still train women. She can still do that. But why not give her a shot on TV? You know, Billy Gunn is a trainer down at NXT, but he's on television every week with Road Dogg doing his thing. I don't see why they can't do the same thing with Sara Del Rey. Even if it's just on NXT. She can work matches with the same women that she's training. Let her wrestle Paige. Let her wrestle Emma. Summer Rae. Why not? What, because she doesn't look like a Barbie doll? She can't be on TV? It kind of pissed me off in the article when she made that comment, oh, I may not be the prettiest girl, because that's probably the attitude down there. That's why she said that, unless she thinks she's ugly, which she's not. There's nothing wrong with the way she looks. She looks perfectly fine. You know, I wouldn't kick her out of my apartment. I don't know what other people are looking at. So I look at that. I read the article. It's a great story if you didn't read it. But she's great at what she does, and I'd like to see them put more emphasis on the women, and she would be a new face they could bring in, and they could probably have some kick-ass matches. I just don't know why they don't do it. Sheamus beat Christian in a Memphis street fight, as voted on by the fans. I know these guys have wrestled a zillion times before, and at this rate, there's no way they can do this at WrestleMania. There was a time when I thought, okay, they're going to build to some kind of gimmick match between them at WrestleMania, but now they've wrestled so many frickin' times, I don't see how that's even possible. I assume they're just going to be in the Battle Royal. But they busted their asses in this match. They took some hard shots with those kendo sticks and the other weapons, and the finish was awesome. I mean, if you dozed off during this match because you're tired of seeing Sheamus and Christian, then too bad for you, because they had musical instruments set up at ringside like they did when Dolph Ziggler, remember him? Ziggler and Damian Sandow had their never-ending string of matches on Raw many months ago. So Sheamus dragged a giant drum into the ring, which Christian was about to use on him, and out of nowhere, Sheamus hits the brogue kick, puts his foot right through the drum, right into Christian's face. Picture perfect. It looked awesome. The finish was great. The people reacted to it. It looked brutal. And Christian was done for. Sheamus picks up the win. And I did an article for the Layfield Report this week, if you missed it. Did a column on Christian. And how Christian is, in my opinion, the most underappreciated talent on the WWE roster right now. And he is. I'm not saying underrated. There's a difference between underappreciated and underrated. There's a lot of guys in WWE who are underrated. Christian's not one of them. Underappreciated, without question. The number one guy. And one of our listeners, you know who you are, Vincent, said he could not get into the match on Monday between Sheamus and Christian because every time these guys wrestle, Christian loses. And my response to that is, that's how they've been booking this guy for years. It sucks, but Vince McMahon does not see him as a star. That's why he left WWE in the first place. Remember, it looked like they were building to a John Cena-Christian program. There was this one segment on Raw where Cena was in the ring, and I remember Christian was on stage, maybe with Tomko, and they had this interplay back and forth, and it was entertaining, and It was actually, I was looking forward to them doing something with Cena and Christian, and they only teased it. They never actually went all the way with it, I guess because Vince was afraid or he didn't see Christian on the same level. But that's why he left in the first place and went to TNA. He and Cena could have had a fun feud. It looked like they were going in that direction, and they killed it dead, so he left. And yeah, they brought him back, but they never brought him back in a main role because Vince just doesn't see him as a main event level guy. He's what you call a great hand. He's a body you can put in there as a face or as a heel, and you can rely on him to have great matches. I mean, why is this a surprise to anybody at this point? They put the world title on him twice. First of all, it was the world title, not the WWE title, and the world title was always five notches below the WWE title, except when Triple H had it, but that goes without saying. But he won it, and then if you remember, he lost it 2 days later at the SmackDown tapings to Randy Orton. And then when he won it back in the summer, it was because Orton kicked him in the nutsack, and the title changed hands on a DQ. So they've never seen Christian as being anything more than a great hand. He's a great utility player to have on your bench. You know, they need a spot filled in an Elimination Chamber match. All right, we'll give one to Cesaro, because Cesaro is going to be a big star in the future. We've got big plans for that guy. And let's put Christian in the other spot, because he can work well with the other guys in the ring. Or maybe that really was going to be CM Punk's spot, and with him gone, they gave it to Christian. You know, whatever. Whatever it was, they've never pushed him as a top guy, even when he's been in top matches. He's never been the focal point. He's never been pushed that way, and he never will be. It would be nice if this feud with Sheamus wasn't so lopsided like the one was with Orton all those years ago. You want to have a competitive feud. If the same guy wins every single freaking match, I don't see where the drama is if people know the result before the match even starts. But that doesn't mean I can't enjoy any of Christian's matches. I just thought that was so silly. I can't enjoy these matches because he's going to lose. So what? I agree, it's stupid, it sucks, it's not how it should be done, but he goes out there, he has kick-ass matches, what's not to enjoy? But if you didn't see the column, go check it out, because I've gotten a lot of good feedback from it. I was surprised, I actually thought I would have to fight people on this one. They'd write in and say, Christian, underappreciated, give me a break, he's 40 years old, he had his run. But people seem to understand where I'm going with this point. I'm not saying Christian should be headlining WrestleMania Wrestling for the championship. All I'm saying is here's a guy who's been around since the mid-90s. He's really, really good at what he does. He was a great tag wrestler. He's been a great singles wrestler. He's a hell of a lot closer to the end of his career than he is the beginning of it. And it just seems to me the way that he's booked, WWE doesn't really appreciate what they have in this guy. He's one of the few guys left over from that Attitude Era who's still active, who's still going, who can still go. Goldust would be another one. And I just don't know that they fully appreciate what they have in this guy, and hopefully they will. And hopefully we'll stop having to listen to JBL via Vince McMahon on commentary every week talking about how ugly the guy is. And it's so ridiculous to me. But anyway, that article's up there on Layfield if you want to check it out. Daniel Bryan and Big Show beat Randy Orton and Batista in the main event. Big Show took out Batista with a crescent kick. 8 an RKO from Orton, so that left Orton and Bryan. Went for an RKO. Bryan shoved him off right into a spear from Batista. Knee plus to Batista. Is he calling it knee plus now? Because they didn't say that on Raw, but I could have sworn Bryan mentioned that name on SmackDown on the postgame show a few weeks ago. Knee plus, you know, since he's a B-plus player. I mean, maybe he said it as a joke, and I took it for something that was more than just a joke. But you know what? Fuck it. I'm calling it the Dragon Knee. I used that in an email I wrote back to somebody. That's what I'm calling it from now on, because I think that's a much cooler name. So he hits Batista with the Dragon Knee, went for the knee to Orton. Orton ducked it, draping DDT, tried again for the RKO, but this time Bryan nailed the Dragon Knee, gets the clean pin. So a huge night for Daniel Bryan last Monday. You know, he's winning the championship at WrestleMania. And I'm happy I'll be there live to see it, because it'll be a special moment when he finally does. And then after he wins it, all the fans that have been riding the Daniel Bryan bandwagon can then turn on him, because that's just what people on the internet do. Carlos Colon was announced this week as the newest inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2014. They announced him on SmackDown Friday night. He is the father of Carlito and Primo. He's also Epico's uncle. I think all three of them are inducting him, so Carlito back in WWE, at least for one night. Colon started his own promotion in Puerto Rico back in 1973. The World Wrestling Council where he booked and wrestled. His most famous feud was with Abdullah the Butcher, who's already in the WWE Hall of Fame. I think I once said, fuck Carlos Colon here on this podcast after I told the story about Bruiser Brody's murder and how Colon continued to book Invader 1 after that. As a matter of fact, Invader 1 is actually feuding with Carlito right now down there in Puerto Rico, so he's still going strong, 60-something years old. And they even turned Brody's murder into a storyline at different points with Invader and Colon, who also feuded. I still feel that way. My opinion has not changed. You know, the guy booked himself to hold the world title in his own promotion 26 times. Good for him. I guess it's no different than Jerry Lawler in Memphis or Vern Gagne or any number of promoters who booked themselves to win titles in their own promotions. So I can't fault the guy for it. He drew money. He was a big star down there. And so he's going into the Hall of Fame. I have to talk about Sting here. I have a lot of people still asking me, what's up with Sting? Is he in? Is he out? What's going on? Latest update on Sting is that there really is still no major update, but Sting made an appearance in London over the weekend. Ric Flair was supposed to do a Q&A. I guess Ric Flair must have signed a new deal with WWE because he got pulled. So Sting was brought in to replace him for this fan Q&A event. And there's videos up on YouTube. Somebody went to the event. They recorded Sting. So this is coming from Sting's own mouth. Okay, he was asked a whole series of questions. And look, even if Sting has signed with WWE, and I believe he has. I think Sting is signed, sealed, and delivered. Probably signed weeks ago. They're just keeping it hush-hush. The guy's not going to go out there and say, yes, I've signed a contract with WWE. He's going to play coy. He didn't deny it. He didn't really just say much of anything as far as his current contract status goes. But I think he signed. And he dropped some hints as far as what he would like to do in the future. I mean, he said before that he would love to have a match with The Undertaker. And I know people hear that and they roll their eyes. Oh, God, enough. You know, these guys are old. They're going to go out there. They're going to have a crappy match. Give it up. It's never going to happen. I'm not so sure about that as far as it not happening. You know, you listen to Sting. He said again he wants to face The Undertaker. Undertaker is the only guy left that he wants to wrestle in his career. There's nobody else in any other promotion anywhere in the world, TNA or anywhere, that he wants to wrestle. If anybody, it would be Taker. He said he's actually been on YouTube doing research, watching old Undertaker matches. He was watching Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 25 on YouTube. He admitted he hasn't watched the TNA product since he left the company. However, he has made it a point to watch Raw over the last few weeks, which is kind of interesting. So he said a lot of things here that make me think he's in. Is he in to wrestle? That I don't know, but he's in. He's got to be in. I figure they're saving him for a cameo at WrestleMania, or they're saving him for Raw the night after, because they always like doing big things on Raw the night after. So I could see him being on either one of those shows. And once he's in, and once people know he's in, they could even use him for things on the network to promote some of the WCW stuff. Because I'm sure that would be one of the things they would want to use him for. WCW DVDs have sold very well. Why not have the face of WCW under contract doing promotional work, pushing these WCW releases and pushing WCW content on the network? So I could see him doing some of that also. Even if that does kind of kill some of his mystique. But he talked about some of his favorite matches, the one with Flair at the Clash of the Champions, the match with Hogan at Starrcade, which I'm sure money probably had more to do with that than the quality of the match itself. Not only did the match suck, but Sting got his ass kicked for most of that match. I don't see how he could probably look fondly back on that match, aside from a big payday he probably got for it, since that was the biggest pay-per-view they ever did. So he did not like working with Vampiro in WCW. He's not the first person to say that they disliked working with Vampiro. He also was not a fan of working with RoboCop in WCW. So I wonder what RoboCop thinks about that. And yeah, he said he was disappointed he never had a real feud in WCW with Bret Hart. They did wrestle, but I guess they didn't have an actual lengthy program. So, yeah, he answered some questions. He kind of danced around the whole WWE thing, but he made it very, very clear that he would love to work with The Undertaker. And I don't know if it's going to happen, but I would not dismiss it outright after hearing what he said from his own mouth, okay? Because I think he's under contract, and they have to know that there's money to be made in a match like that. And if they think there's money to be made, believe me, the match will happen. Maybe it'll happen at WrestleMania next year. We're going to find out very soon, because I figure if they're going to go in that direction, they will probably start with a tease for it, either at WrestleMania or the night after. My idea, and I'm just going to run through this really quickly here, and this will be the final time I talk about this, but if indeed this is the direction that they want to go in, if they're going to bring in Sting and they have plans for one Sting match, if the only guy this guy wants to work with is Undertaker and Undertaker is down for it, because there's marquee value in the match. I don't give a shit what anybody says. You can, you know, speak until you turn blue in the face about how nobody wants to see this match. It's 10 years too late. They're both old. They can barely move. It would be sad. It would be pathetic. You're right. Maybe it would be. You know, I saw some of Sting's last matches in TNA. He tries hard, but he's not the Sting that he was even 5 years ago. Not out there wearing a t-shirt. Same can be said for The Undertaker. You know, I don't think we're going to see The Undertaker doing any of his death-defying dives anymore over the top rope, thank God. But to say that there's not marquee value still in an Undertaker-Sting match is ridiculous. Of course there is. There's always going to be an audience for a match like that, a match that hasn't happened before. You know, and the best thing I think that they could do, if that's what they want to go with, is, you know, you bring the guy in, he can make a cameo at WrestleMania. You could even have him help Undertaker win. I mean, Undertaker's going in there with a guy who, I mean, this may be the most unrealistic opponent that he's ever had in terms of Brock Lesnar is this much younger, gigantic beast of a man who's going in there with a guy who looks like, you know, if you blow on him the wrong way, he's going to fall apart. You know, the guy is very fragile compared to how he used to be. And you've got to come up with a convincing way for him to go in there and beat Brock. Because Brock's not beating The Undertaker, okay? We know this already. He's not ending the streak. The streak is never going to end. And Brock sure as shit ain't going to be the one to end it. But you've got to come up with a convincing way that, okay, how is Undertaker going to beat Brock? How is he going to pin him? Is it just going to be a normal back-and-forth competitive match? Pick him up, Tombstone, 1-2-3? I don't know. That just seems... It would seem kind of disappointing to me if it was just very straightforward like that. But I could see a situation where, hey, there's Sting. He makes a cameo, lights go out, lights come on, there he is, baseball bat. If there's one thing that could take Brock Lesnar out, it's a baseball bat. A couple baseball bat shots, turns around into a Tombstone, 1-2-3... And you've got a story there where you can build up for the following year's pay-per-view where, look, I want you as my opponent because, A, I want to end the streak, but, B, you need to know that you wouldn't even have a streak anymore if it wasn't for me. Because you never would have gotten out of this match with Brock if I didn't come down and help you. And so all of a sudden you plant some seeds of doubt. Yeah, Undertaker needed help. He needed help to win this year. Can he survive another year? That's the story that I would tell if that's the match that they're going to make for next year. And I don't know if it is. My best guess on Undertaker's career, how it winds down, Undertaker has two more WrestleMania matches after the one with Brock, assuming that he doesn't get, you know, seriously hurt. I figure he wins this year. Next year's a question mark as far as who you put him up against. It could be Sting. It could be somebody else. And then at 32, which is rumored to be in Dallas, so you're in Undertaker's home state of Texas. They may try to fill up Cowboy Stadium, 100,000 people. The biggest Undertaker match that you can do, in my opinion, even bigger than a Sting match, is a John Cena match. It's Undertaker and John Cena. That's the biggest match left for him to do. There is no bigger match for the Undertaker left at this point than a match with John Cena. John Cena is the biggest star in the company. John Cena has beaten them all. And you will have a lot of people very nervous if they do that match. And they know it's probably going to be Undertaker's final match. Very, very nervous that they may end the streak. Maybe Undertaker wants to go out that way. Maybe it's his choice in his final match to pass the torch and end the streak. And of all people, can you imagine if John Cena is that person? People's heads would explode. It would be comical to watch. That's how I see it happening. I don't see him losing, but I'm just saying. His final match, I could see that being at 32 in Dallas. He goes 24-0. Calls it a career, rides off into the sunset or the graveyard or what have you, And that's how I see it. I get questions all the time. What's going to happen with Undertaker at WrestleMania next year? How many more matches does he have left? When is he going to retire? There it is. Okay? You don't have to email me anymore. Now you know. I predict two more matches after this year. Next year is, it could be anybody. It could be Sting. It could be somebody else. I don't really see the purpose in it being a Bray Wyatt or a Roman Reigns unless they're going to win. I mean, I guess it could be a boost to their careers to go in there and have a great match with The Undertaker. But at this point, you got to put him in there with big names. He's only got so many matches left. You got to put him in there with big names. And those names would certainly qualify as being the biggest ones, I think, that you could put him in there with. I thought NXT was a pretty dull show this week. Probably enjoyed the women's match the most. I enjoy the women's match the most on Main Event, too, come to think of it. So, first time that's happened, I think, ever. Paige beat Sasha Banks with Charlotte in her corner and Summer Rae's head on a stick again. Summer Rae, I guess, is very busy filming for Total Divas. She's going to be in a WWE, I think, the Marine 4 sequel soon. So, hopefully her head won't get as big as it was here on this stick. Paige won with the Scorpion Crosslock. I love that move. Kind of surprised she used it again so soon after the arrival match. I thought maybe she'd save it for special occasions, big matches, and kind of alternate between that and the Paige Turner. Maybe she will. This was only her first match since she won the match with Emma. So we'll give it time. We'll see what happens. Charlotte attacked her when the match was over until Natalya came out to help Paige. The Ascension beat Cal Bishop and Travis Tyler. They've made some tweaks to the Ascension act. They have new music now. No more dark entrance. No more freaky contact lenses for Victor that make him look like his eyeballs are missing. And the new thing now, or maybe I just didn't notice it until this episode, but the fans in the arena at Full Sail are starting to get into these guys a little bit more, almost as baby faces. And they do this, I don't even know how to do it. It's almost like this yah, yah, yah chant. You know, even when the referee counts a near fall, instead of chanting 1, 2, 3, they chant, yah, yah, yah. I don't know if they're doing it to mock the grunting sounds that these guys are making when they're in there, or if there's an inside joke somewhere that I'm not aware of. But that may be a new thing now for these guys. They may have their own chant. To me, it sounds like a noise that Hulk Hogan used to make when he would wrestle. Yeah, he would like throw a punch and he would be like, shiah. It kind of reminded me of that in a way, but I don't know, maybe it's just me. Anyway, Victor has a new move they call the guillotine where he comes off the top rope, his opponent is standing in the ring, and he nails him with a knee to the face. Actually looked brutal. That's what we need to see more of from these guys. I've said before, the Ascension bores me to tears. They do. But this week, it was a little bit better. On commentary, they keep comparing them to the Legion of Doom in their prime. I don't see it. If anything, I think they compare more to the Steiner brothers. You know, the Steiner brothers would go in there and they would steamroll guys. And, you know, it's the only thing with the Steiners, though, is that they would kill people when they were in there. I mean, there were times when Scott Steiner would do a suplex to a job guy in a match and drop the guy right on his head. And I'd literally scream at the TV when he did it. Yeah, the Beverly Brothers did that a few times with their move, that the Shaker Heights Spike, which is still the most devastating tag team finish I've ever seen. I don't want to say the Ascension maiming people in there, but they could be a little more vicious and incorporate more moves like that, I think, into their offense. They finished off Travis Tyler here with their Fall of Man. The other problem, and one big reason I think it's hard for me to get into their act, is that they have no competition. There's no feud. There's no program. They've been tag team champions for like 6 months now, maybe a little bit more. They have not had a program in months. They've had no direction. There's, you know, there's just overall a real lack of tag teams down there in developmental. You know, had they signed a team like the Wolves, which they had the chance to do, they called them the American Pitbulls when they came in for their tryout, you know, they could have given the tag team scene down there a nice little boost. But they passed on them, and they don't really have anybody else. So that's problem number one they have to address here, is that the Ascension's been down in developmental for a long-ass time, and they've brought them up for some dark matches on the main roster. So I don't know if that means they're getting ready to bring these guys up finally. But if they're not, and they're going to be down there for another 6 months, I mean, they got to find guys for them to wrestle, because it's just them coming out and beating up dudes is going to get really old really fast. Renee Young was out to join Tom Phillips, Alex Riley, and Tenzai on commentary. Tenzai is no longer Tenzai. He's now Jason Albert. I see on Twitter people calling him John Albert. I don't know if that's a mistake. It was clearly Jason Albert here on this show, unless they've changed their frickin' minds again, and now he's gone from Jason to John. Hopefully not. At least with Jason, they gave him an awesome first name. Renee Young. I want to talk about Renee Young here. I love Renee Young. Who doesn't? She's awesome. She's great at what she does. Her many roles there, roving backstage reporter, or when they have her host a pre-show, post-show, she's very good at that. I was excited to see what happened when they put her in this role of commentator, to see if she excelled at it, how she would do, because they don't really have any full-time female commentators calling men's matches. So I thought it would be kind of interesting to see where it goes and if she gets better at it over time. It's been a while now. This is not working. It's just not working. Maybe in another 6 months, she'll be even better at it. I think the problem is they don't let her call a full show. If you want her on commentary, have some balls and put her out there for the entire show. Because now, more often than not, she'll call the Divas matches. So she comes out, and it's all about gossip. Backstage gossip, girl gossip. And when the match is over, she leaves. This week was an example. I think she was out there for a men's match. But she doesn't really offer anything new. She doesn't really bring anything to the table. Most of the time, she's flirting with one of the other guys. If Regal's out there, they're flirting all the time. It's like, Jesus Christ, get a room. But Regal was not there this week. But there's no reason for her to be out there. Four's a crowd. They have three guys out there doing commentary. If Renee Young was coming out there and she was blowing everybody else away, that would be one thing. But she's not. So I just wish they would let her interview guys and just keep her off commentary, because as great as she is, I just don't think this is working. Mason Ryan beat Wesley Blake. I know I say this all the time, but Mason Ryan is no good. He's really no good. I know he's got big muscles, but he also looks so clumsy and awkward in the ring, and he's been in developmental for how many years now? He was on the main roster, they demoted him, he's been down there for years. He has not gotten much better at all. He's not offensively bad, like Kali bad, but he's not good. So what do you do with the guy? I don't have any interest in seeing him on Raw. So I don't know where he goes from here. He's not really getting any better. He comes out and, you know, he squashes guys and there's nothing there. Maybe they don't let him speak and maybe that's part of it. They never really let him cut a promo. They never let him show his personality. Maybe he's got this wonderfully charming personality that we've never been able to see. If so, you know what? You got nothing left to lose with this guy. He can't get much worse. Shove a mic in his face and let him cut a promo every now and then, and maybe he'll impress people by his wonderful promo skills, or he won't. I just don't know where you go with him at this point. We had angry Xavier Woods, which just looked completely comical. He comes out to Somebody Call My Mama, but he's all mean. He's all business. He's not there to dance. He's not there to sing. The music and his demeanor just did not go. So he came out for a match. It was supposed to be him against Rusev, and Tyler Breeze came out. And Tyler Breeze talked about what happened, because you know, the both of them got their asses kicked by Rusev at the Arrival special. So Breeze is out there, and I forgot what he said. He made a comment about maybe getting hit in the face, and the crowd at Full Sail started a "not the face" chant, which is awesome. That's one of the best. That's one of the better chants they have down there. Is "not the face" when Tyler Breeze is out there. That, and when Breeze screams at the referee, "Don't touch me!" Love Tyler Breeze. So he gave a cheap shot to Xavier Woods. It looked like they were going to wrestle, but it was just he lulled him into a false sense of security. And I think he kicked him. I forgot. He did something to him. And out came Rusev. Rusev destroyed Xavier Woods. Tyler Breeze disappeared, never to be heard from again. Rusev put him in his accolade again. It did not look good because it's a camel clutch. In a camel clutch, your arms are supposed to be on the guy's knees, and he stretches you back, but immediately Xavier Woods took his arms off, and so I don't know what the hell the point of this move was. So just your standard Rusev stuff. Lana said something, and he finally released the hold. Sheamus returns to NXT this Thursday, we were told. Yay. Can't wait. Bo Dallas, we learned, will get his rematch for the NXT title with Adrian Neville in 2 weeks. And Bo Dallas beat Colin Cassidy in the main event with a double arm DDT. So I don't know if that's his new finish or if they're experimenting with some new moves. It's certainly better than that belly-to-belly he was using. But I think he really needs a solid finish that he can stick with. I don't know that the double arm DDT is it, but it's what he used this week. We had a boring chance during this match, and I have to say, this match did drag. This match probably went 5 minutes longer than it should have. This was not a good showing, I think, for either one of these guys. Colin Cassidy was out there. I don't know where Enzo Amore is. I guess his leg is still busted up, but you would think you could have Enzo out there, even in a wheelchair, have him out there on crutches. He's so entertaining. I mean, you would think they could find another role for him here. And Colin Cassidy has to cool it with the soft chants. You know, they have that S-A-W-T, soft. But he does it like every 5 seconds. You got to pick your spots. You know, by the fifth time, it was like, okay, we get it. So this was not really a great showing for either one of these guys. But one thing that I thought that was funny was the crowd starts the boring chants. And the camera would zoom in on Bo Dallas every now and then to get his reaction, you know. And he's great because I don't know if he knows that the camera is on him, but normally when they put the camera on and they catch him when he's, you know, telling the crowds, "Don't stop Bo leaving," and all these corny catchphrases. And so when they're chanting boring at him, he goes, "Yes, this is Bo's ring." Way to think on your feet. So I thought that was great. Overall, this was not a great episode of NXT, though. Very dull, like I said. I don't read the spoilers. I know they've taped the next 4 to 6 weeks of shows, and I'll find out, like you guys are, what they have coming up in the pipeline. Hopefully they pick up the pace and we get some more exciting episodes in the weeks to come. We're going to take a quick break here for a message from Audible. Come back, talk about TNA. If you are a TNA diehard, if you are a loyal TNA fan and you love Lockdown and you really loved Impact from this past Thursday night, you may want to skip this next segment. Fair warning here before we get into it. So we'll get into the TNA stuff right after this. Check this out, guys. For you, the listeners of The Sound Off, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so that you can check out their service. And it's a quality service. I wouldn't be mentioning it on my show if it wasn't. They have a bunch of wrestling books to choose from in audio form, including Lex Luger's book, Dusty Rhodes' book, Hulk Hogan's book is available with narration from the Hulkster himself. There's even one that chronicles the rise of the late Junkyard Dog in Mid-South, which sounds really interesting. You can choose any one of those free by trying audible.com. If you commute to work, or if you like listening to things other than music at the gym, I know a lot of people listen to this podcast that way. It seems to me an audiobook would absolutely make sense. To get one, make sure you go to audibletrial.com/solomonster. It's another way to show your support for The Sound Off, and you get something free in return. Can't beat that. Again, that's audibletrial.com/solomonster. TNA had its annual Lockdown pay-per-view last Sunday in Miami. Key stuff coming out of the show. Team MVP beat Team Dixie to get control of wrestling operations. Thanks to Bully Ray, who was brought in as Dixie's insurance policy from New York. She turned on them, or he turned on them, I should say. We saw the debut of Willow. We had a fuck finish in the title match, which a lot of people were pissed off about. Abyss, his hand coming up from underneath the ring and screwing Samoa Joe out of the championship, so Magnus retains. And the return of Bobby Lashley in a surprise. TNA came out to wrestle EC3. They didn't really have a match, but Lashley is back. So those are the key things coming out of the pay-per-view. The other big story here, before we get into the Impact results from the show on Thursday, is the stuff about bad influence. Kaz and Daniels, Frankie Kazarian and Christopher Daniels, who were at Lockdown, and I think they both, I don't even remember anymore, I think they were both misted by the great Muta. So they wrestled on the pay-per-view, but they were not brought in for the Impact tapings at the Impact Zone. And they taped the next several weeks of television building to their next pay-per-view. So that probably means they're not on the next pay-per-view, and they're not going to be on TV for the next month or so either, because they weren't at the tapings. And there's been a lot of talk about Christopher Daniels in particular. I don't know when Kazarian's contract is up, but I know from reports that Daniel's contract is due, I think, sometime in April, maybe the end of April, I think his contract is up. And Chris Daniels is one of the TNA originals, so he's been around for a long time. He may well have a nice contract, maybe not an AJ Styles kind of contract, but he probably makes, you know, pretty decent money for himself. Back when TNA maybe could afford to give him that kind of money, maybe now they can't. So there's a lot of speculation that this could be it for Bad Influence, or at the very least, this could be it for Christopher Daniels in TNA. And it just, you know, you talk about bringing back a guy like Bobby Lashley. I'm sure for a nice payday, because I can't imagine that Lashley would come back to TNA for anything less than really good money. And letting a guy like AJ Styles go, just the perception of that is so bad. It just sends such a bad message. And now, again, with the future of Daniels in doubt, and I know Daniels has really been used as nothing more than a mid-card guy, I think the way they've used Bad Influence is awful. Bad Influence is consistently one of the most entertaining things about Impact. And when they come out, whether they're dressed up like the British Bulldogs, or they're dressed up, what was the other team they dressed up as? I already forgot. But they're very, very entertaining. They're fun to watch. And, oh, by the way, they're really good wrestlers. So you can put them in there with a whole ton of different teams, and you're going to get a great match out of them. And they brought in the Wolves. And you would think, oh, great, we're going to get a Wolves-Bad Influence feud. And we haven't. And now we may not. We may never. So you have Lashley is back, AJ is gone. I don't know that there's any people still left out there who are clinging to this hope that the AJ Styles thing is a work, because it's not. So they let him go, and he was the biggest TNA original they had left, one of their biggest stars, if not their biggest star. And now, you know, Daniel's future is in doubt. There could very well be contract renegotiations. Maybe they won't want to pay him as much. They'll want him to take a cut in salary like they did for AJ. That was one of the sticking points in why AJ left. And it just makes you shake your head, because I don't see Bobby Lashley making a lick of difference in TNA. Believe me, if Sting and Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair and Kurt Angle, except for Kurt's first few months, all of these people they brought in over the years haven't made a damn bit of difference in TNA long term. Bobby Lashley sure as hell ain't going to make a difference. But if we start to hear stories about Daniels having negotiations with TNA and they're stonewalling him, or they want to cut his pay, and if he actually does leave, I think in the end he'll stay with TNA, but if he does leave, it just makes them look so bad. Like, why are you bringing in guys and paying them a lot? Supposedly you don't have the money to pay them in the first place. Why are you not paying your longtime guys? Why don't you actually do something with these guys? Why don't you push Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian as being something of a threat instead of a bunch of goofballs? Why'd you let AJ Styles go in the first place? These are the questions as a fan that kind of float around in my mind when I see Bobby Lashley jacked to the frickin' gills, as big as he was back when he was in WWE, because he got a lot smaller. And all of a sudden, as he's gotten older, he has swelled back up to amazing proportions. But to go back to AJ Styles, just to give a quick update on AJ, he may be debuting shortly for New Japan Pro Wrestling. That seems to be the rumor going around. I don't know if they're going to announce him in advance, or he may be a surprise. There's a show in Japan, I think it's WrestleMania Day. A lot of talk that he may make his debut there, he may show up. And he's also scheduled for the Ring of Honor shows, both of them in May, the May 10th show and the May 17th show, which is pitting ROH guys against New Japan guys. I'll be at the one in New York, which is already completely sold out, so there'll be anywhere from 1,800, I guess, to 2,000 people stuffed into the Hammerstein, so that'll be fun. I also got an email from my brother telling me someone he speaks with, who apparently has a source, or so he claims, says that the main event for the May 17th Ring of Honor show in New York is, quote, going to be epic. It's a title match, it's cross-promotional, and it's the start of something huge for both sides. That's what this person says. My guess, if that's true, and ROH has not announced what the main event for that show is going to be yet, but if that pans out to be the case, my best guess is that maybe it's an IWGP title match with Okada defending against AJ Styles. Just a guess, but it would kind of make sense. I mean, I figure if Styles is going to do dates for New Japan, if he's going to debut in New Japan maybe next month, it does kind of make sense, especially if they did a title change. That would be huge. For that title to change hands overseas here in the States, in New York, at that show would be huge. And then AJ could always just drop it back to him in Japan, you know, the next time he goes over there. So, there's a lot of fun things going on right now. I really am looking forward to that ROH New Japan stuff coming up in May. See, that's a cross-promotion to get excited about. TNA has their own cross-promotion going on right now with the Great Muta, the Wrestle 1 promotion. There's some good stuff coming out of that. Sonata is the X-Division champion. We'll get into that, but let's talk about Impact. Impact from Thursday night. On this two-hour show, Bobby Lashley and Angelina Love made their TNA returns, and Sonata, Tigre Uno, Brittany, the former Santana Garrett, and Jeff Hardy, as his alter ego, Willow, all made their debuts on this one show. It was also MVP's first show as the director of wrestling operations for TNA. And Bully Ray now appears to have turned babyface and took out every member of Team Dixie, except Austin Aries, who wasn't even on Impact. That's a lot of stuff for one show. They've introduced a lot of new faces, which I like. Samoa Joe is still the number one contender, at least for another week, which I like. And there was no Dixie Carter on the show, the best part of all. I've been begging for less Dixie on my TV now for months. And not only did I get less Dixie, I got no Dixie. So I cannot totally hate on the show, but I did hate more than I liked on this two-hour show. The problem with trying to cram so much shit into one show is that my notes are all over the place here. So just bear with me. I'm going to go step by step on all the key stuff. Abyss. Abyss is once again wearing a mask after inexplicably not wearing one at the pay-per-view. I like the new mask, probably because, aside from the color, it's identical to Kane's last mask. It's like they took Kane's last mask and said, you know, turn it brown or whatever the hell color it was. It almost looks like a caramel color. But what happened between Sunday and Thursday that he went from being unmasked to suddenly being masked again? This was not explained. And while I'm on the subject of Abyss, I have to get this off my chest. I was one of the few people who loved the Joseph Park storyline. Or the character. I loved the Joe Park character. I was a Park mark, okay? I admit it. Even when it wasn't popular, people couldn't understand what the hell was wrong with me that I liked this character and I liked this storyline. But I did. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. Nobody gave that storyline more of a chance than I did. And it dragged on for almost 2 years. We thought the Aces and Eights went for a long time, 18 months. This thing went for 2 years almost. 2012 is when Joseph Park first appeared on TV. And after all this time, what was the big payoff to this storyline? What was their explanation for why Abyss decided to masquerade around as an attorney? He's crazy? Is that the reason? Is he bipolar? Because if so, it would have been nice for them to say that, but they never did. This is lazy frickin' writing. They had me, you know, invested in this story, and they gave us no payoff, and that sucks. That's one of the reasons I could never get into TNA before. Nothing ever made any goddamn sense. So I just had to mention that, since the Joe Park storyline is finally over with, and I feel like an idiot for expecting an interesting conclusion. Joke's on me, I guess. So Abyss is now Magnus's new bodyguard, which I like. It's not Sean and Diesel, but the Magnus character, if he's going to be booked like a pussy, he needs somebody tougher than him to watch his back. So I like that. MVP promised Samoa Joe another shot at the title, which he'll get on Impact this Thursday. But here he gave Joe a match with Abyss. And boy, were these guys moving in slow motion. I don't know if it's Joe's weight or if he was just selling the injury to his gut when Abyss nailed him, pun intended, with Janice at the pay-per-view. Hit him in the midsection with that board. But Abyss too. I mean, these guys were moving so slow. They were moving at a snail's pace during this match. Eric Young ran down to attack Abyss for the DQ, and for the title match this Thursday, he's going to be chained to the monster outside the ring. I don't think that bodes well for Joe's chances of walking out with the title, but we'll see. The stuff with Sonata, I really like. Sonata beat Austin Aries to win the X Division title at a recent Wrestle 1 show in Japan that had both TNA and Wrestle 1 guys. They did mention that. They did mention that he beat Austin Aries for the title, but they never showed any footage of it. Why the hell would you not show footage of that? Inexplicable to me. They had this pre-tape backstage, though. This is what I like the most. It was the segment from earlier in the day. The Great Muta is back there. No makeup or anything like that. He's just sitting down. And he calls over Sonata, tells him to sit down. And he explains to him how important his, you know, they have the subtitles for us to understand because he's talking in Japanese. But he's explaining how important it is, Sonata being in TNA, how important it is to him, how important it is to the Japanese people, for Japanese wrestling. I like this a lot. It made it feel like he really has a reason for being here. The match itself, it was Sonata and Tigre Uno also making his debut on this show, his Impact debut, because they were both on the pay-per-view. Match went maybe 3 minutes. You know, I don't understand why you're bringing these guys in. These guys are freaking awesome wrestlers. You give them 3 minutes. Why? Why? This is so stupid. Oh, my God. But you know what? They gave them 3 minutes. For the 3 minutes they gave them, they looked good. The crowd was into it. Sonata won the match with a moonsault on Robbie E. So they got a win over the tag team champions. And based on what they did here, I liked it. The fans seemed to like it. It just went by way too fast, which is the story of pretty much everything on the show. Brittany made her TNA debut. She beat Gail Kim in an upset. This is one of those things where not having squashes, I think, really hurts new talent. TNA does not have much low-level talent anymore. They just can't. They got rid of so many people. And NXT really is the only brand left where they do squash matches. They don't do it on Raw and SmackDown anymore. NXT is the only place that I could think of in terms of Major League Pro Wrestling that has anything even resembling squash matches. And even there, a lot of the guys that get squashed are other developmental guys that they haven't started pushing yet. But there's something to be said if you're trying to showcase a new talent and you want them to show off their finishing move or whatever, you got to put them out there and let them kick some ass. So here's this new girl making her debut. In her very first match, she faces the best woman they have on the roster. I know Madison Rayne is the champion, but that doesn't make you the best. Gail Kim is the best thing they got going in that Divas division, in that Knockouts division. And in her first match, she wrestles Gail Kim. And yeah, she beat Gail Kim, but now what? Where does she go from here? Is anybody going to remember this fluke win a month from now? It was all just an afterthought to Gail Kim, Lady Tappa, and their big breakup, which is the other problem I have with this. Did I miss something? Did I miss them building tension between the two of them on TV in the run-up to lockdown? I don't remember them having any problems at all. They've been together a few months now. Everything's been fine. No problems. All of a sudden, they have one miscue during this match, and afterwards, Tappa's beating the shit out of Gail. And now it looks like they're gonna feud. This was like a 3 month storyline condensed into one night. They had a segment with Spud in EC3 paying homage to Delusional Dixie in the ring before MVP interrupted. He brought out Bobby Lashley, said in his first act as the director of wrestling operations, he signed Lashley to a TNA contract, and EC3 is going to have to wrestle him. I don't remember if they announced if it's going to be on Impact this week or when. Part of this was just a blur. I couldn't remember. EC3 has actually grown on me. I like the guy. I like the character. Lashley, I couldn't care less about. He never did anything for me before. He doesn't do anything for me now. MVP put Spud in a match later on against Willow. We'll get into that. I was not a fan of that either. Sam Shaw and Mr. Anderson, they had a street fight. Holy shit. This segment. Sam Shaw comes to the ring with a mannequin. Or at least the upper half of a mannequin. Don't ask me where the lower half was. I don't even want to know. Had a red wig on. I guess it was just, you know, made up to look like Christy Hemme. Yeah, and I get it. Sam Shaw's a wacky, kooky guy. He's a little out there. That's his shtick. That's his gimmick. And then he puts the mannequin in the corner and he starts kissing it. So let's see here. Way too many backstage segments. Check. Lots of talking. Check. Mannequins. Check. What does that remind you of? Or who does that remind you of? Yeah, me too. Anyway, this sucked. Anderson won with the mic check, and then he too kissed the mannequin. So Anderson getting Sam Shaw sloppy seconds. We had a segment here. Angelina Love from The Beautiful People is back in TNA. I vaguely remember much about Angelina Love. I just remember being at a TNA show in Brooklyn many years ago, and I have a picture of her I put on Facebook, and I remember making the comment that she needed a sandwich, and she still needs that sandwich. She called out Velvet Sky. They had a little mini reunion in the ring. Basically, the gist of this was Angelina wanted to get the beautiful people back together. Velvet Sky was very hesitant to do so, and that was it. That was the whole segment. This went nowhere. This was a waste of time. Main event was Rockstar Spud over Willow by DQ after Willow pilmanized Spud's ankle with a steel chair, then gave him a splash off the top of a ladder. The announcers openly acknowledge that Willow is Jeff Hardy. They are one and the same. They say it's Hardy's alter ego. Now, mind you, Jeff Hardy has been in TNA now for, what, 5 years? Never seen this alter ego before. But it's his alter ego. This whole thing is just goofy to me. I like the Willow vignettes that led up to this, because I didn't know what they were going to do. I didn't know if they were going to have him portray two different characters, like Joe Park and Abyss, but not acknowledge that Jeff Hardy was Willow. I didn't know what Willow was going to look like beyond that mask and the face paint we saw in the vignettes. We found out at Lockdown, but I was willing to give it a chance. It was kind of creepy, right? The vignettes were a little creepy, and I was going to give it a chance. And I see Jeff Hardy come out at the pay-per-view. I see Jeff Hardy come out here on this show, and it's just dumb. I don't get it. It's basically Jeff Hardy with a Jushin Thunder Liger mask and a mean streak. It's definitely a more violent side of Hardy. He even laid out the referee in this match. You know, Hardy is a big name. He's one of the biggest stars they have. He's a big star in WWE. It was a big coup for TNA to get him to come over. He's been well established for years. He's the number one or number two babyface in TNA, depending on who you think is higher, him or Joe. If he was a mid-card guy trying to get something going to help him get over, you know, nothing was really happening for him, that'd be one thing, but we know it's Jeff Hardy. They acknowledge it's Jeff Hardy. He dresses like Jeff Hardy. He wrestles like Jeff Hardy. He's fucking Jeff Hardy. Just be Jeff Hardy. This is like when Hogan played Mr. America on SmackDown. And that was pretty stupid, but at least there was a storyline reason for it. He was banned, and so, yeah, he did the old Dusty Rhodes Midnight Rider deal where he shows up wearing a mask to get around it. But everybody knows who he is. It's kind of like a wink and a nod. Dixie's gone. She has no power in storyline anymore. So why is this guy still playing dress-up for Halloween? It'd be like WWE having John Cena show up on Raw every single week as Juan Cena, his Mexican brother. And the guy, you know, Willow, he killed Rockstar Spud. Absolutely destroyed his leg. It makes me think that Spud's taken time off. I don't see how Spud can be back on TV next week unless his whole leg is in a cast. So is Willow supposed to be a heel? Because he was a total dick during this segment. But, you know, he comes to the ring and the entrance was kind of cool. And when the match starts, it's Jeff Hardy. It's Jeff Hardy with different face paint and a Jushin Liger mask. That's it. That's all it is. And it's like, why? It's too goofy for me. It doesn't work. Bully Ray comes out to cut a promo to end the show. I take it back. This was the real main event, talking. He had taken out all the members of Dixie's entourage throughout the entire show. He took out the Bromans and DJ Zima. He took out EC3. And did he take out somebody else? I think that was it, because Aries wasn't there. So the only guy left to take out was Bobby Roode, who he called out, came out. They brawled for a bit. Show ended with Bully putting Bobby Roode through a table. So, at least for this week, we got babyface Bully Ray. Now, keep in mind, this is the same man who only 3 weeks ago was calling Ken Anderson's wife on the phone and telling her that he was sending her husband home in a casket and to tell their infant twins that daddy says goodbye. And here, the man was cheered like he rescued 15 kids from a burning building. So, the lesson here is you can be as evil and as twisted and as sadistic and as much of a prick as you want to be, because you're always one quick babyface turn away from redemption. It's all good. So this show felt like a new regime was put into place. There's definitely somebody new in charge of creative at TNA because there's so many different things going on now. It's, if you watch an Impact show like this and you watch Impact from a month ago, it's almost two totally different shows in terms of the pacing, in terms of everything. I mean, some of the characters are the same, but clearly there's somebody new in charge. I have my guess as to who that is. I didn't read the spoilers for the next few weeks. I'm going to let things play out, see where it goes. But for the love of God, quit trying to squeeze 10 pounds of shit into a 5-pound bag. I've heard Steve Austin use that expression before, and that's never been truer than in this case. Okay? 6 fucking people debuted on this one show. I just did my review, and I already forgot half of what happened. Slow it down. Give these guys a little more time to show their stuff in the ring, and enough with all the backstage segments. It was one point midway through the show, it was one backstage segment. They transitioned to another one, and another one, and another one, and another one. It's like, enough! How many backstage segments in a row do we have to see? Show this week has the Bromans defending the titles against the Wolves and Sonata and Tigre Uno in a three-way. Joe and Magnus for the world title with Abyss and Eric Young chained together on the outside. These should be good if they give them some time. Give them some time, please. Let's get into the mailbag here. If you have questions, you can email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. You could also send MP3 questions. We have 2 of them that we're going to actually get to this week. MP3 format only. Please include the text of your question in the body of the email, or else I probably won't use it. And always please include your name and where you are from. Our first audio question comes to us from Caleb.
Hello there, Solomonster. This is Caleb from Rialto, California, and I was hoping you could answer this one question for me. But with all the storylines in TNA wrestling nowadays, what was your favorite TNA storyline to date? I know TNA gets a bad rep, but before 2010, TNA storylines were pretty good. I honestly liked it, the main event Mafia versus the TNA Frontline in 2009. And such. I also enjoyed the angle going on between Joe and Angle that led up to Lockdown in 2008 for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. What was your favorite one?
My favorite one is probably the one you just mentioned with Joe and Angle from 08, I guess it would have been, when they were feuding for the championship. I mean, that's just me. I like that whole, the way they built that up almost like a real fight. It almost had like an MMA type build, but it made that match feel like a big deal. Because Joe had just, Joe had been on this undefeated streak for a while before that. Angle was still relatively new in TNA. And so the two of them kind of locking horns for the championship was a big deal. The cage match they had, Joe going over, really cemented him, I think, as a top guy there. So I like the whole build to that. It was pretty cool stuff. I have to be honest with you, though, aside from that, because I was aware that was going on, and I would tune in for that, but I wasn't watching Impact full-time like I do now. People always say, if you don't like TNA, why do you watch it? And it's such a bullshit cop-out answer, and I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying, in general, people will say that. And I'll get that even after the review I have on my show this week. People will start complaining, oh, if you don't like TNA, why don't you watch it? And it's like, you know, shut up. People are not allowed to not like something for 1 week. There's plenty of weeks I don't like Raw. Does that mean I should stop watching WWE? It's like, get over yourself. But I wasn't watching much of Impact the full episodes back then because I couldn't get into it. It was hard to follow what was going on. They were doing a lot of stupid stuff, and when they would do good stuff, it was mixed in with a lot of bad stuff, and I just didn't have any interest in watching it, so the Joe Angle stuff from 08 is one of the few things I actually remember from back then, and that probably would be my favorite. The next audio question here comes from Anthony in Indianapolis.
What's going on, Solid Monster? This is Anthony from Indianapolis. I had 2 things for you today. First, was Kane ever played by someone different than who plays the current character? Because I noticed back when he debuted, it just seemed like he was a lot bigger, like taller. And second, I wanted to get your thoughts on personally my favorite finisher move, the spear. Now, I know a lot of people have used that move over the years. Now, I really wanted to get your thoughts on Roman Reigns, because I think that dude, he might hit the spear better than anyone I've ever seen before. What do you think?
I get questions about Kane like I used to get about the Ultimate Warrior. People think the Ultimate Warrior died in a car accident and they brought a new Ultimate Warrior. And there's always been one Ultimate Warrior. There's always been one Kane. The only time they had anybody else portraying Kane was when they brought in Festus, Drew Gallows, Doc Gallows, call him whatever you want. They brought him in to be the fake Kane, and they had Kane versus Kane. And the fake Kane won a pay-per-view match, and then Vince McMahon just didn't like it, and they killed him off the next night on Raw. That was the only time. As far as the spear, you know, Roman Reigns hits a pretty good spear, but it's not better than Goldberg. To me, Goldberg still hits the best spear. One of my favorite spear spots is from the Goldberg-Raven match that they had on Nitro back in 98. Go back and watch that match. If WWE hasn't already taken it down, I know it was on, or highlights of it were on YouTube. I have never seen a crowd explode the way that they did when Goldberg hit Raven with that spear towards the end of the match, and then all the Flock members came in to attack Goldberg, and he dispatched them one by one. That was when he won the U.S. title. He's still the best. I'd still put Goldberg at number one when it comes to that. Cliff writes in. He says, now that Bray Wyatt is calling himself a god, does that mean that the Wyatt family is a religion? And if so, does that mean that it's tax exempt? I mean, Bray's got an in at the IRS and all. So, I see what you did there. Very clever, my friend. Very clever. Daniel from Ohio, shortly after the Rumble, when it was obvious that Bryan was not going to be the number one contender going into Mania, and that CM Punk was not going to be in the Mania picture, I, like many, predicted that Bryan would face Triple H, with the stipulation being that if Bryan won, he would be in the main event. The other part of my prediction is that Triple H would assign Kane as some sort of special referee or enforcer to completely stack the deck against Bryan, only to have Kane turn on the authority and help his old buddy get to the main event. Do you see this being a possibility? Yes, I do think it's a possibility, and I don't like that at all. I don't like it because I think when Bryan beats Triple H, and he is going to beat Triple H, I don't know why people are so worried that Bryan's going to lose to Triple H at WrestleMania. The way they've set this up, I don't see there being any other outcome. So Bryan's going to win, and I think when he does win, he has to win on his own. So even if Triple H has somebody, whether it's Kane or whoever, come out in the middle of the match, but Bryan fights him off. You know, he can stack the deck as much as he wants. And we got 3 weeks left, three more Raws before WrestleMania. So it's possible that, you know, even this Monday, Triple H may make a stipulation for the match, and he may say that Kane is the director of operations, and he's also going to be the special enforcer or the special referee for this match. And I don't see Kane, you know, being this mole where he just out of nowhere turns on the authority, because that would make absolutely no sense. I mean, the way that Kane has screwed Bryan over, the only thing that would make sense in that case, if Kane was the ref, is that Bryan kicks out of a pedigree. Triple H can't believe it. Bryan's just, he will not quit. He will not die. Triple H gets fed up. He gets in Kane's face, tells him to count the three, and you know, maybe he slaps him. That sends Kane off the deep end. Kane lays him out with a choke slam and walks off. Another referee comes out. Or Kane sticks around and counts the pinfall when Bryan pins Triple H. I could definitely see that happening. It's not out of the realm of possibility. I think there's actually a really good chance. I just don't like that idea. I don't want there to be anybody who helps him win the match. I don't want the story to be that the only reason Bryan was able to beat Triple H, the almighty Triple H, is because Kane helped him. I want Bryan to be able to beat him on his own, and so the story is that he did it, he earned that spot in the main event, and then he goes and he wins the title. So they could do it, and Kane, you know, Kane's got to have a role on that show. I figure he's going to wrestle. So he's either going to wrestle or he's going to be the referee in that match. Now, if he's not the referee in that match, what match is there for him? There's been talk that maybe the Shield wrestles in a six-man tag against Kane and the Wyatts. Shield in a six-man tag, again, you get no argument out of me. They have great six-man matches. That match, to me, I don't know that I would want to do that match. Kane and the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, I could see him maybe entering himself into that as well. But he's going to have a role somewhere on the show. And in the Bryan Triple H match, I'd say that probably is the best possibility at this point. Michael wants to know, last week you said your favorite superstars currently on the roster are the Shield. Of the three, who is your favorite member? That's not fair. I can't. That's like asking a parent to pick who their favorite child is. You know, if I had to pick one right now, I'd go with Seth Rollins. He's on fire right now. I mean, in the ring, on the mic, they call him the architect of the Shield because he's the glue that holds that whole faction together. I'd say Rollins, but they're all great. This comes from Danny. Are there any wrestling referees you think are deserving of a WWE Hall of Fame induction? Yes. Tommy Young, Earl Hebner, and Mike Chioda. Those are the three names that come to mind. Cameron from London, England. Do you think The Rock killed Ryback's momentum? The reason I bring this up is because at the time, Ryback was over, and if it wasn't for The Rock challenging for the title at Royal Rumble, I'm sure Ryback would have won the title at Hell in a Cell. I wouldn't say The Rock killed Ryback's momentum. I'd say Vince McMahon killed Ryback's momentum. They're the ones who booked that storyline. They made the decision in the summer that they wanted Rock to get the title shot to set up the match with Cena. So actually, it probably stretches. They made the announcement in the summer, but they probably knew going back a year what they were going to do, how that whole program was going to play out. That was their choice, and it was the right choice to make because that match made them a lot of money. I wasn't really a big fan of the second Rock Cena match. I thought the first one was a little bit better. And even that match was only it was good. I didn't even think that match was all that great. But they made millions of dollars off that main event of WrestleMania both years. So would they have made as much money? Would Ryback have taken off like Goldberg as the next big thing had he won the title? We'll never know. But he definitely had a lot of momentum. And if it wasn't for The Rock challenging for the title at the Rumble, they never would have taken that reign, that CM Punk reign, as long as they did. The only reason they did that was because they wanted him to still be the champion. They didn't want to break up that 434-day deal. They wanted him to be there to drop it to The Rock. If it wasn't for that, you know what? They probably would have put the title on him at Hell in a Cell. And where he goes from there, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he'd still be a main event guy right now. But that certainly did... it killed whatever momentum he had. I wouldn't blame that on The Rock. It's not The Rock's fault. Delfino from New York City. Your last sound off discussing Mr. T got me thinking about how WWE's celebrity appearances have contributed to the launch of a superstar to pop culture status. When I think of the two biggest cash-making, game-changing legends, I think of Hulk Hogan and Stone Cold Steve Austin. Goes without saying these men would still be what they are in the long run and without them, or without them rather, but I can't help but think that by having them connected with big celebrities like Mr. T and Mike Tyson at WrestleMania, it put them over the top with the mainstream audience. My question is this, although I believe John Cena would still be viewed the way he is now in the long run, do you think a similar scenario would have helped him? Maybe a Tito Ortiz or a Jay-Z, Kobe or Shaq, especially since WrestleMania 21 was in LA that year that he won the title. And moving forward, which celebrities or athletes do you think in a proper program could cement Daniel Bryan and other future big-time players as the guys that are in that pop culture beyond wrestling realm? That's a really good question. I don't know who. It depends who's the big star at the time. I would say that if you're going to do something, you can't bring in a B-level or a C-level celebrity. It's got to be an A-level guy. Mike Tyson was already past his prime in 98, but he was still a big-time draw on pay-per-view. Mr. T, going back to the first WrestleMania, was huge. There was no bigger star, like action star in pop culture at that time in the mid-80s than Mr. T. When the A-Team was on the air, he had come off, you know, that role in Rocky III. He was big-time. And so he was looked at as an A-level guy. Now, it would have to be, I think it would just have to be a really, really big TV star or a big movie star. I'm talking A-level shit. I'm talking getting somebody like DiCaprio, you know, on Raw. Maybe not him, but, you know, somebody of that caliber, because otherwise, it's not going to work. It has to be somebody that people perceive as a big star that people are going to want to see. And it's harder now because, here's the thing, in 1985 and even 1998, you didn't have reality TV. You didn't have internet stars. Because there are people that have YouTube shows that are big or think they're big stars, right? Everyone's a star now. Everyone's a star. Every reality show, the Kardashians are stars. You know, Honey Boo Boo is a star. This stupid show on USA Network now that we're seeing commercials for. I forgot the guy's name. I don't know who the hell this guy is or where he came from or why I should give a shit that he has a TV show. But everyone's a star. Like, things are so different now than they were back then. I wonder even if you did something like that with like a mainstream celebrity, if it would even have the same kind of impact. It's just a different time now. But would it have helped Cena? Probably not. I just think Cena is a guy who people were going to resent, I think, no matter what, in that character, in that gimmick. I don't really think that having Sylvester Stallone come in, you know, and kind of put him over and be in his corner would have really made that much of a difference like it did with Austin. Austin, but here's the thing, you can't compare the two anyway because the Austin character was just so much easier to root for than John Cena. You know, Austin was cool. You know, he was anti-authority. He would flip you off. He would drink beer. It was a lot easier for a teenage boy to cheer for a guy like Steve Austin than it would be a guy like John Cena, who caters to the younger, you know, the kids, the younger demographic. The girls love him. It's all well and good. But you can't really compare the two characters. I mean, Cena would be more comparable to Hogan, but that was just such a different time. And finally here, Marcus writes in, on episode 317, you talked about Breaking Bad, and this week I went on a binge watch and finished it. To make a wrestling connection, did Walter not remind you of Vince McMahon from season 3 on, and Jesse kind of reminds you of CM Punk? Pinkman as Punk. Punk is straight edge, and Jesse was a meth head on the show. I don't see the connection there. Walt is Vince? I could see that. I you know, that's an interesting one, because he's a guy who finds success in something. He makes a lot of money. It all goes to his head. He wants to put others who encroach on his territory out of business. He wants this big drug empire all to himself. He's like, he wants to be this big kingpin. And yeah, I think that's the parallel that I would make between the two of them. Vince put all those people out of business. He wanted to go national and be number one and have everything to himself. And anybody who tried to even compete and get on his level, he would immediately shoot them down. That's the connection I would make between the two of them. And by the way, good choice, binging on Breaking Bad. I can't put that show over enough. If you've never watched it, if you don't think you're going to be interested, it's drugs and I don't care, I'm telling you, you're making a mistake. Give it a try. Give it a watch. I promise you, you will get hooked. You will like that show. It probably is the best show ever on television. For years, I would say The Shield was, and I'm not talking about Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and Dean Ambrose. There was a show many years ago, Michael Chiklis played this crooked cop. That was my favorite show. It's still up there. If it's not number one now, it's number two behind Breaking Bad. But there really is some... I don't know about TV now, because there's no real show other than The Walking Dead that I follow on TV now. This Game of Thrones garbage and all this stuff, I don't follow any of that. But if you never tried Breaking Bad, I cannot endorse that show enough. You know, check it out, and then you can thank me later on.
History has been made here!
This week in wrestling history, we got some good ones here. 38 years ago this week, March 15th, 1976, Oklahoma wrestling legend Danny Hodge, who Jim Ross has suggested numerous times in vain to get inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, saw his career ended after breaking his neck in a car accident. The man is tough. His car fell off a bridge into a river. He freed himself from the car, out the dash window, and swam back to shore. I once fell off the monkey bars at the park and took a flat back bump on the ground, and it knocked the wind out of me, so much so that I cried. Okay, although in my defense, my father said he would catch me, and he didn't, but still. I am not nearly as tough as Danny Hodge. 21 years ago this week, on March 10, 1993, Canadian strongman Dino Bravo met a grisly fate when he was shot to death in his home in Canada. Shot 17 times. 7 bullets to the head, 10 to the torso. So someone really wanted to make sure he was dead. He had only retired from wrestling the year before. The belief was that he was involved in an illegal cigarette smuggling ring that may or may not have been run by the mafia. Rick Martel has said that Bravo was able to attract a lot of customers because he was a celebrity. People knew him, so they wanted to do business with him, and that must have ticked off the wrong people. Bravo even confided to some friends before he died that he knew he didn't have long to live. So his murder has still remained unsolved to this day. 20 years ago this week, today in fact, on March 16, 1994, in a match for WCW in Munich, Germany, Mick Foley went to the ring to wrestle Big Van Vader with 2 ears, and he left with 1 1/4 ears. Yes, this was the infamous match where, while doing his hangman spot in the ropes, most of Foley's ear was ripped off. Actually, it's been forever since I read Foley's first book where he talks about this, but I don't think the ear actually fell off until Vader punched him afterwards when he got freed from the ropes. It was probably hanging by a thread, and one of those short shots from Vader, I think, is what knocked it off. If you watch the fan cam footage of the match on YouTube, you can see the referee pick something up off the mat and hand it to somebody. That was Foley's ear, and they rushed it backstage to put the thing on ice. Foley continued the match, crazy bastard that he is, and he opted not to have surgery to repair the ear. which is why it still looks deformed if you look at it. Although it worked for him, it worked for his Mankind gimmick. What happened is that at the start of the show, some wrestler asked the ring crew to tighten the ropes because they were too loose. Well, it wasn't WCW's normal ring crew, and so they tightened the ropes as much as they possibly could, so there was hardly any give to them at all. And keep in mind, WCW did not use ropes, actual rope for their ring ropes. They used elevator cable wrapped in rubber tubing. So imagine using elevator cable tied as tightly as possible and then getting your head stuck and caught in the ropes. You can see how somebody would lose an ear. WCW's ropes were always harder than WWE because WWE uses actual rope wrapped in duct tape. So they have a lot more give to them. But trust me, though, I've been in a WWE ring before, and I can tell you that their ropes still hurt, especially if you have no idea what the hell you're doing in there and you're bouncing off them. It still hurts. 17 years ago this week, on March 10th, 1997, came the debut of Raw is War, with all the new music, Marilyn Manson's The Beautiful People, new intro video, Pyro, Rampway, the giant Titantron that has largely remained unchanged after all these years. I mean, it's undergone some slight changes, and now they have the HD set where they can change the graphics and they can adapt it for whatever show they want. But let's be honest, when you look at the basic Raw setup now as compared to then, it doesn't look radically different. But this was a needed change at the time. Raw was kind of stagnant. They were getting their asses kicked weekly by WCW. The show the week before had mostly taped footage from a house show in Germany. That's where Bulldog won the European title from Owen Hart. But that show, I mean, the footage looked really grainy and crappy, and it did one of the lowest ratings in Raw history. So WWE needed a change. Raw is War was their answer. The show featured a main event, Psycho Sid and The Undertaker against Mankind and Vader. Featured Undertaker doing one of his giant suicide dives over the top rope, wiping out all the heels on the floor. And it also featured one of the more memorable segments in Raw history, the great debate between Jerry Lawler and Paul Heyman as Paulie Dangerously, the leader of ECW. WWE and ECW had a working arrangement at the time, and WWE was helping out Paul Heyman by doing an interpromotional angle and letting Heyman advertise their first pay-per-view, which was barely legal that year, April 13th. That was a big deal for ECW to get on pay-per-view. And then to get that kind of promotion on USA Network for them was huge. So on TV, Lawler hated ECW. He would refer to it as extremely crappy wrestling and talk about how it was just a bunch of guys in a bingo hall throwing each other through flaming tables. To this day, I will still get emails asking me why Lawler hated ECW so much. That's how effective he was during this whole angle. He didn't really hate ECW, people. Okay, just like he didn't really hate Andy Kaufman. Lawler was just really, really good at his job. Do you think that if Lawler hated ECW so much, he would have agreed to go work a show for them in front of that crowd? I remember when Lawler invaded the ECW arena, the heat in that building when the lights went out and then they came back on and Lawler was standing there was incredible. And then he wrestled the match against Tommy Dreamer at another ECW show a couple of months later. But anyway, the great debate had Lawler and Heyman at a podium in the ring. Jim Ross was the moderator. And Lawler just kept insulting them. He said WWE sells out the Philadelphia Spectrum every time they run there, 20,000 people. Meanwhile, ECW brags about filling up a bingo hall with 1,100 people every month. Heyman had the ECW guys there with him. And so as Lawler is talking, they start circling the ring like sharks, you know, tasting blood in the water. You see the Dudley Boys, Dreamer, Sandman, the Eliminators, all these guys just chomping at the bit, just waiting to kill Lawler. And then he and Heyman start shooting on each other. Lawler says Heyman must be a little light in the loafers, since he's always, all he's ever wanted to do is hang around these ECW guys. He hangs around a bunch of athletes because he can never be one himself. Heyman even made a crack about Lawler liking women much younger than him.
You ought to get down on your hands and knees and thank your lucky stars that you're getting to plug a stinking pay-per-view on Monday Night Raw. Do you understand that? And why Vince McMahon allows it, I'll never know. And you're proud of drawing 1,100 people in Philadelphia?
Because we are!
That's 4 million people! There's 1,100 morons that have come to watch paint dry!
You want to shoot?
Yeah, I'm shooting with you, that's right, yeah!
Hey! How you doing at the Seesaws in Louisville, Jerry? Huh? You're open!
son. Don't call them Scout Waller. Why? Why? Because they're insane to your ass. We earned everything we got. We give these people their money's worth.
You never earned anything in your life. You're a 35-year-old man who still lives with his mother and
how
father.
You?
Huh? If it wasn't for your mom and dad who financed this bunch of crap, you wouldn't be anything. You understand that?
So it all breaks down in the end. Lawler's in trouble. He says, don't make me call back there. I got friends. I'll bring them right out here. And Heyman's like, go ahead. Who do you got? Who do you got back there? So, of course, he calls to the back. Nobody comes out to his defense because nobody likes Jerry Lawler. And so Lawler bails out of the ring to safety to end the segment. A great, great segment and a reminder of how awesome Jerry Lawler used to be and how awesome Paul Heyman still is to this day. 12 years ago this week, on March 11, 2002, live on Raw from the Joe in Detroit, Hollywood Hulk Hogan, Scott Hall, and Kevin Nash as the NWO beat Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock in a handicap match, with Hogan pinning The Rock after a leg drop to build to their match at WrestleMania 18. This was the closest we ever got to Hogan versus Austin. They brawled a little bit in the ring, and then Austin briefly attacked Hogan again after the match was over. But this was the only physical interaction the two ever had, and it came here during a match on Raw. 10 years ago this week, on March 14, 2004, perhaps the final WrestleMania ever to be held from Madison Square Garden took place, WrestleMania 20. These days you have cities bidding on the show, and they only do big stadiums, so who knows if they'll ever get back there again. This show was memorable for lots of different reasons. Chris Benoit winning his first world title in WWE and standing tall to end the show with Eddie Guerrero, who was the WWE champion at the time. Very emotional scene, probably more so now than it was back then. Only back then it was emotional in a good way. Now it's just depressing. Undertaker made his return with Paul Bearer as his manager, came back as the Dead Man, or some Dead Man Big Evil hybrid, and he's pretty much been that version of the Undertaker ever since. Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg each wrestled their final WWE match at that time, stinking out the joint because the crowd knew both guys were leaving and they crapped all over the match. The most over guy was the referee, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Goldberg would never return. Brock did come back, but it wouldn't be for another 8 years. It would also be about 8 years before The Rock wrestled another match for WWE. He teamed up here with Mick Foley against Evolution in a losing effort in a handicap match. Trish Stratus turned heel on Chris Jericho in a line with Christian. And John Cena opened the show in his very first WrestleMania match, his first of many, beating The Big Show to win the United States Championship. Imagine that. John Cena winning a title, winning a match at Madison Square Garden and not getting booed. Believe it or not, there was a time when that did not happen. 6 years ago this week, on March 12, 2008, mere weeks before WrestleMania 24, Jeff Hardy was suspended for 60 days by WWE for his second failure of the company's wellness policy. He was supposed to win the Money in the Bank match at WrestleMania that year, but was pulled from it as a result, and instead CM Punk won the match for the first time. That may help explain why WWE was a little too gun-shy to put the title on Hardy at the Royal Rumble that year against Randy Orton. Maybe they just felt that he couldn't be trusted. You know, it would have been a disaster to put your top title on the guy and then he fails a drug test and he's off the WrestleMania card. I was at that Royal Rumble pay-per-view at MSG when he challenged Orton, and everyone just badly wanted Hardy to win the championship. Not only did he lose, he lost quickly, and he did so right out of nowhere. I mean, the finish was an RKO out of nowhere. People were not expecting the finish at that point. And so when the ref counted three, you could feel all the energy just get sucked right out of the building. Hardy was, if not the number one most popular wrestler at the time, he was easily number two behind John Cena, who had been out with an injury. So realistically, Hardy at that time was probably number one. They did put the belt on him at the end of that year, but then they took the title off him a month later at the Royal Rumble. And finally here, this is not this week in history, but I want to give a quick shout out to Bill Hoyler, one of our listeners. He's a fan of the Sound Off and has also been battling pancreatic cancer since 2006. The silent killer, they call it. One of the deadliest cancers you could possibly get. Something like 96% of those diagnosed with it do not survive more than 5 years. And Bill here has been hanging tough for 8 years now. He's only 31. Dude's double tough. He's set up a fundraising page for anybody who wants to help him and make a donation. You can find his page and read his full story, which is pretty fascinating stuff. If you go to youcaring.com, type in the name Bill Hoyler, H-O-Y-L-E-R, into the search box, and his page should come right up. I know firsthand through my own family how much cancer sucks, but if you want to show some support, check out his page, or you can give Bill a follow on Twitter, at PanCancerFighter, that's fighter without the E, is his Twitter handle. So if you have questions for the mailbag, you can email them to me, thesolemnmonster@gmail.com. Again, if you have MP3 questions, send them on over. Please include your name and where you are from. Follow me on Twitter, @solemnmonster, as we march to 5,000 followers. I'm closing in on 4,900, so you guys can help me in my march to get there sometime around WrestleMania. @solemnmonster is the place to follow. You can also check out the Sound Off. We're all over Facebook, the profile page for myself. We have a fan page. And we have a group page, closed discussion group. We're picking up new members every single day. Our weekly Raw discussion thread during the show on Monday nights now is pinned up top in our group. So if you're not a member, please find the group, and you can subscribe or apply for membership, I should say, and I will approve you. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel. The Solemn Monster is my username. Although, I think if you type in the full name of the podcast, you'll see my videos come up. Probably the first thing that comes up. Again, there's reviews of the Jim Ross one-man show. JR is going to be doing more shows in New Orleans WrestleMania week. So if you have a ticket or if you're thinking about going, check out my review of the New York City show. It'll give you a sense of what you could probably expect. And my interview with Matthew, the Botchamania guy, which has been well-received. Over half an hour conversing with the man behind the Botchamania videos. That's up on our YouTube channel as well. So you could please check that out and leave some feedback. And I think that covers all the important stuff. We're going to be back next weekend, episode 319 of the Sound Off here as we inch closer to WrestleMania. We'll probably be doing another roundtable show around number 321. I think that's the plan right now. And keep showing your support of the show in any way, whether it's, you know, following on Twitter, spreading the word, making a PayPal donation, buying a t-shirt in the store, signing up for the Audible trial. There's a multitude of different ways you can show your support for the show. And to those of you who have already done so, thank you. I very much appreciate that. And do tell people about us, because we pick up new fans by the day. And a lot of those people come from others who already listen to the show, and they rave about it. And they say, you got to check this guy out. You got to check this show out. And more often than not, people get hooked. That's all it takes. So I appreciate that. Until next time, be well. Stay safe. Be back next weekend with more of the Sound Off. Until then, take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Solemn Monster Sounds Off, giving you the good.
Sierra Hotel. India. Echo. Lima.
The bad.
And I am back to headline WrestleMania, so deal with it.
And the ugly.
Then they have a hat. The hat itself is actually nice. It looks like a nice hat. What's wrong with this is it's a beard baseball hat. The entire brim of the hat is a hairy beard. Who the fuck would wear this?
Well, mostly the good.
You can't disregard the fans. You can't disrespect the talent. I think we all want to see a change.
Solemn Monster sounds off.
Since 2007. On thesolemnmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.